Today on Family Talk...
People oftentimes don't have a clear direction on where they're headed. And so what that means is they don't have clarity on where they're going. Talk about the philosophy of choice. When you have clarity about where you're headed, decisions become increasingly more clear.
The clip you just heard was from an interview we did at the International Christian Retail Show in Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and a few months ago, I had the privilege of traveling to Atlanta with my co-host, Dr. Meg Meeker. Over the 3 days we were there, we interviewed several amazing authors and speakers on a variety of topics. The show floor was loud, and you may hear some background noise, but the content is strong, and I'm excited to share these great interviews with you over the next few months. So here now is the beginning of our interview from the show floor of the World Congress Center in Atlanta, Georgia, on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Hi, I am Meg Meeker here with Jeff Schinnebarger, and we are talking about his brand new book, Yes or No, How Your Everyday Decisions Will Forever Shape Your Life. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Yes or No. What prompted you to write it?
Well, as a young leader, I'm 34 years old. At a very young age, I've had opportunities to lead great organizations, and a lot of friends of mine have launched projects of their own. And it really comes down to this question, what do you do when you don't know what to do? It happens over and over and over again.
You mean, how do you make up your mind?
Yeah.
Okay.
As an element, I mean, I think as a young leader, you get into scenarios where you really don't know what the next best decision is. Sometimes you get multiple opportunities that are good and you have to choose between those. Sometimes it's multiple opportunities that are bad and you have to make the best choice. Mm-hmm. And as a leader, when you get into a new position and you don't know how to make that choice, what do you do next? Right. How do you make those decisions?
Well, but wouldn't a Christian say to you, well, pray.
Right.
Pray and search the scriptures and God will make it clear. But that's not, what if God gives you two great options?
Yeah.
So tell us what to do.
I think it's happened multiple ways. I mean, prayer is definitely part of the equation every time. But I also think that God has given us some things we've learned in life that play a role in that. I think everyone has a philosophy of choice, whether they know it or not, that helps drive decisions.
A philosophy of choice.
That's correct.
What is that?
So there's three parts to that. The first would be answering the question, what do you love and who do you love?
What do you love and who do you love?
Yeah. I think a lot of times we say we love something, but our choices might not match what we say we love.
Oh, I bet there's some wives that want to tell that to their husbands. Absolutely. Right now, huh?
Probably my wife at times, right?
I mean, that's yeah. They say they love us, yeah. But why aren't you ever around? No, yeah. No, but that's a great point.
It's part of it. I wrestled with this with my wife. We adopted our first child. Her name is Jada. It happened really fast. It was an unusual, quick adoption. And very quickly, I started realizing I didn't make choices to change my schedule to prioritize Jada, my daughter. And so we ended up taking a sabbatical and had these really tough discussions about what is more important for our family. Is it our family or is it my work? That's a real tension.
Where were you working at the time?
At that time, I was the creative director for an event called Catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
And
and you were working a lot of hours a week. A
lot of hours. And even more than that, we were traveling a lot.
Okay.
So I had to make choices to not travel as much, to really spend time with my family, to prioritize what I truly loved. And I think that's the first part of developing a philosophy of choice.
Okay.
Who you love will determine what decisions you make. The second part is what wisdom have you been given? So I think over time we've educated by things, we have personal experiences that drive our wisdom, we have a faith system that drives our decisions. All these things start to develop a series of wisdom that you have been given, that God has given us over time. And through that, we have a responsibility to make choices accordingly, right?
How do you know what that wisdom is? Is it a feeling? Do you look at what God has lined up in your life? How do you know what that wisdom is?
I think that's a good question. I think you have to bring people around you that speak into that with
okay.
you. You know, I think about this scenario. It's a kind of a weird story, but I would go into corporate scenarios, and you might do this at your work sometime, where you see an empty conference room.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go into an empty conference room and sit by myself at that table. And it's an awkward thing to be in a conference room by yourself, but it's also very healing and like quiet and peaceful in that moment.
I think it's kind of fun.
It is kind of fun.
Yeah.
So then you start to imagine, who would you have in those seats if you had to make a major decision? Who are the people that you that really believe in who you are? They understand your gifts. They understand your strengths. They also understand your weaknesses. And so that they can speak into those major decisions with you.
This is kind of scary stuff because you're talking about peeling a lot back in your life, looking at the core of who you are and saying, what am I here for?
Yeah.
What am I good at and where am I going? And friends, loved ones, family, you can tell me.
Absolutely. You know, there's people, there's always going to be haters in life, right? There's going to be people that say no to everything you do. And there's going to be people that believe in you. And there's going to be people that say yes to everything you do. But you want people that'll speak real truth, real honest feedback, that believe in you, that understand what you're designed to do, maybe at times better than yourself.
Yeah. Say, don't go there. You're not very good at that. That's very hard for somebody to say. So philosophy of choice. The first thing was, who do you love and what do you love? Then what's next?
So the second is, what wisdom have you been given?
What wisdom have you been given?
And the third is this phrase that we use as an organization. I lead this organization called Plywood People, and we have this phrase, we will be known by the problems we solve. And that for some reason, God has put opportunities in our lives and responsibilities in our lives to be His hands, His feet here in a broken world. And our responsibility is to help shape those new creations in the world, things that are broken. What are we called and what are we responsible for bringing solutions here on earth to? Mm-hmm. And I think those three things combined start to develop a direction for where we should be going.
So it's a cool way of thinking about Christianity and Christians, though, because we're really here to pinpoint the problems we're to solve, using our gifts to solve them. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that that's a huge reason why we exist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the fall, our responsibility now is to be on earth restoring it in a unique new way that we feel called to do. Mm-hmm. And that's what we get the opportunity to be involved in every day, to live out our faith in that way. And I think for a lot of people, they refer to that as a word called calling, right? Like that they feel responsible, that God has given them the abilities to do this mission that is in front of them.
So how does yes or no help us as Christians who want to live out our calling make decisions?
Well, there's a whole bunch of things in there. There's a process to go through in major choices. So dealing with things like, what are all the options that you have in these decisions? You know, some of the times you're people that are stuck in moments of tension. Maybe you're stuck in a moment of transition. How to deal with relationships, right? Mm-hmm. It's these tough scenarios that define us over time.
So this is a book that could help anybody who's having marital struggles, who's having a difficulty with their job, maybe difficulty with a child.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's in the book, there's a whole bunch of personal stories of mine. I mean, really of my wife and I and tensions we've had. I'll give you an example. I was in the Dominican Republic and on a missional trip with an organization called Hope International. And they do micro-enterprise projects all over the world, amazing organization. And I remember we took a break one day and we were at this, like a hotel, and I went down to buy something for my wife. And it was a little shack, like imagine a blue tarp that was hanging up above the sand. And I was by myself and I was just going to get her a blanket or something like that and kind of a developing world product and just something to bring her back. And I remember in that moment, it was this amazing moment of tension, a horrible moment of tension, where a woman said, basically offered herself to me in that moment.
Oh.
And it started at $40 and it ended at $5 that day. And I remember running from that place and saying no and running back to my hotel room and weeping with some friends. I think in that moment, you think about the decisions that you make every day and how that can not only change that woman's life, but my family's life.
Yours and your family's,
life, and
yeah.
All those things. It was the first time that I came face to face in that level of realness to that issue. And so it's a scenario that would have affected my family, my personal life in so many ways. I'll tell you another scenario. I was potentially working on a book with a friend of mine. His name's Charles Lee. He's this great idea guy. And we were going to write a book together called Good Ideas. And we had outlined the entire book. And I remember going home after we had spent a whole day together. And I told my wife this whole thing. She loves Charles. Charles is a great friend of ours. And I remember her looking me square in the eyes and saying, you know what, Jeff? I don't think you should do this. And Andre, is her name, she loves me, she cares about me, she wants me to succeed, she believes in me, right? Mm-hmm. And she said no to me. It wasn't a good idea in her mind. I didn't understand why. And I remember calling Charles and telling him, my wife said no. And he was like, why? And I was like, I don't know. She just said no. So we said no. And what we didn't realize in hindsight, 1 month later was when Jada came into our lives. We adopted 1 month later from that day. And so she had this perspective that was something greater than mine.
Did she know Jada was?
She didn't know.
She didn't know.
No,
wow.
But she just had this sense, and she was obviously in a prayerful moment in time, and she felt like it wasn't the right decision in that moment.
God really does. That's what he wants in marriage, is to speak to you through another person or through a loved one. So this is really personal. This book is very, very personal.
Very personal.
Now, Jeff, you call yourself a social entrepreneur. What's that?
Well, it's really looking at societal problems that exist today and trying to come up with new solutions to those problems. So we work with a whole community in Atlanta that are dealing with these ideas. In the last 2 to 3 years, we've worked with about 100 startups that are not just here to make money. They're here to find a problem that exists in society and come up with a new solution.
Are these for-profit or non-profit?
Both.
Both, okay.
There's a little bit of both. I would say about 50-50. I mean, the stories are all over the place. There's a girl that started an organization called So Worth Loving that is really encouraging people that they have self-worth, that they are here for a reason. So she started writing on T-shirts, and now she has 10,000 followers, you know?
Oh, wow.
You know, there's a guy that started making a new infant baby carrier called Lalaboo. That it looks just like a kangaroo pouch. You can put a baby right in the front. And part of that idea is to support these mothers in Africa. So there's all these creative new solutions. And I think it's in churches and communities all over the nation. I get to specifically focus on it in Atlanta.
So how do you find these people?
They find me.
Oh, really? Yeah.
It's not because I'm perfect anyways, but because I started a social enterprise myself. And so other people started recognizing that. And I'm a guy that has ideas and makes them come to life.
And you can put feet on them.
I put feet on them.
And they start marching. And they march in a straight line. So did you apply your own decision-making strategy when you left your old work and started this work? Because I would imagine that's pretty scary. Hmm. You're a young guy, you've got a young family, you're starting a business all on your own. What did your wife have to say about that?
I mean, the biggest thing I had to overcome was my fear, right?
Yeah.
My wife was less scared than I was. She's a missionary's kid growing up, so she's used to not having a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Her concern wasn't so much about not having money. Her concern was me doing something that I wasn't supposed to be doing, you know?
Oh.
And so I think that's something we all have to overcome, is the fears that we have deep within us. Sometimes it's fear of success. Like, what if this really works? My wife and I talk about that. Like, say this book does really great, and let's say it became a New York Times bestseller. I'm not expecting that, but what if it did? How would that success and demands affect my family time? Because we've seen friends that have had it negatively affect what it can do to the people you love most. What if that happened? Do we really want that to happen? Some people have fears of people saying no to them, right? Mm-hmm. Fears of rejection. But I think for me, I think when I read the scriptures, I think about Genesis chapter 3. And in Genesis 3, this is right after, you know, the fall happened, right? And God came back to the Garden of Eden, and he said, Adam, where are you? And Adam was hiding, and he said, Adam, why were you hiding? And Adam responded, I was afraid.
Mm.
And it's interesting to me that the first emotion after the fall was fear.
Fear.
It will never go away.
It grips you. It can paralyze you.
Endlessly.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a part of every decision I make. It's going to be a part of every decision you make.
So when you're preparing to make a big change, say somebody's out there going to make a big change, whether it's get married, whether it's start a new job, move across the country, and they've read your book and they're going through this decision-making process, and now the fear is settling in, what do you do?
Well, I think the first thing is to recognize that there is the fear. Many people get paralyzed by that fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember for years working with Catalyst, I got to talk with Andy Stanley a lot. And he said, we'd ask him every year, if you could tell a young leader one thing, what would you say? And he would say, have courage.
Mm-hmm.
Pursue the things that you feel like God has called you to do. Take the courage, take the next step. And some people will be paralyzed by fear over and over. But if you're having affirmation from other, if you feel like God is clearly saying this is the right direction for you, you've gone through the process of making good choices, I think you have to move forward in new ways. Mm-hmm. Those are the things I've learned. I mean, the fear I had in that transition to pursuing this nonprofit I lead was the fear that no one would support my vision, right?
Ah.
I remember there was a point at which I couldn't handle it myself anymore. And I had to ask for others' help. I had a job. I could pay the bills. I could do these things on my own. But what about when people are supporting me? Do they really believe that this vision came from God? Do they believe that I have the ability, the leadership, to make this vision come to life?
Yeah.
To ask for help.
Well, and you're not only asking for help, but you're asking people what they think of you. Hmm. Do you believe in me? Do I have a strong enough faith that God would really say something and I'd go, yes? So you're really asking a lot. So we just sort of press through our fear? Because the fear doesn't really go away, does it? Do you think we just jump?
You know, I do think that there's risk management that everybody has. There's levels.
You're such a guy.
There's levels of risk that everyone has. For instance, I'll tell you this. After I left one job and I was pursuing a series of projects, I remember I did about 10 different things at the same time. Why? Because I was fearful that they would all fail. I figured if I did 10, one of them would be all right, and a bunch would fail. The reality is, everyone is going to fail. I have failed many times. And if failure is your fear, then you have to get up, you have to keep going, you have to keep going. So fail fast. But you have to understand what level of risk you can handle. Sometimes it's financially. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's personal levels of influence. You know, there's all different levels of risk that play a role in it.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing I think we've realized is that there's these different decision-making styles that people have. I believe there's 7 different natural decision-making styles that are built within all of us. I don't know what yours is. I'd be curious to hear what you say. But one's a gut reaction. That's my normal style. Everyone says that, right? Like, mm-hmm. what does your gut say? What does your heart say in this scenario?
Mm-hmm.
Another might be a list approach. So these are the people that make pros and cons lists.
Yeah.
Is that you?
I've done that.
I think you're writing them as we speak.
Yeah, I've done that.
There's a list approach. There's the data-driven. These are the people that look at the numbers every time they make a decision. Not you?
Not me.
Not you.
No. Mm-mm.
There's collective reasoning. These are the people that bring everyone together around the table to make a vote for any major decision they have, right?
Mm-hmm.
The worst thing possible, though, is if it's a tie and they have to make the decision themselves, right?
Yeah.
There's the story lived.
Okay.
These are the people that would always choose a new experience.
Oh.
They would do anything once, right? Why not? Let's choose that because I've never done it before.
I have a daughter like that.
You have a daughter like that.
I have a daughter. She's 26. Yep. Okay.
Some people are the passive undecided. They're a style in their own. They would never make a choice on their own. They're truly okay with what anyone else would choose for them.
Ooh, now there's some, a psychologist would have fun with a person like that, wouldn't they?
Definitely would.
Why can't you ever make up your mind?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. We have a friend that she's that way all the time. She's always like, you know, we would say, where do you want to eat? And she said, well, where do you want to eat? Right? They return the question. But then there's other people that are these spiritually guided people. They're the people that, not that other people are not spiritual or they don't have a faith in their decision making, but these are the people that would go away for 3 or 4 days in solitude and God truly speaks to them. They come back and they have a direction of where they're going. And those are really amazing people. So I think we all have these different styles, and we've learned that the more we understand about our unique style, the more people can speak into that also.
Well, and sometimes, you know, you might have a couple different ways. Because I always go, you know, go to prayer and I spend time in solitude. But I also make a list. So I think, you know, sometimes we just kind of combine it.
Yeah, there's primary and there's secondary styles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think over time we learn things about ourselves. Like, here's the strength that we have, or here's how we naturally do it. But then we see the weakness and we try to learn from those weaknesses we have.
Right. So. Is this important to God?
Absolutely.
Why?
I feel like God has designed us each uniquely in a very special way. And I think we're all trying to pursue that purpose. I think we sometimes overanalyze it. And it's like, well, if I don't make this decision, am I staying on purpose for what God designed me to do? But I think there is a reason why we are here. And that's why we exist. We're trying to pursue what God designed us to do. to live out that faith in a unique way. For me, I would say in culture, and live out my faith in a way where God intended me to use my gifts in a very amazing way, which is winsome and bringing more people to God.
And you can't do that lightly. You have to be bold to do that. You have to take chances. You have to have faith. You have to be willing to say yes to God. But for me, the harder thing is just saying no. And I think for a lot of women, that's a struggle, saying no to things, particularly Christian women who feel they should attend to everybody's needs all the time. That's what we do. Jesus would never say no. But so many times I think we give up God's best for us because we won't say no. We just say yes to everything. So I think there's a real balance there. And I'm sure men sort of approach it different. I know my husband says no a lot quicker than I do. And he never apologizes for it. And he said, why do you apologize if you say yes or no? But I think women sort of say, well, no, and this is why I can't. You don't need to say that. But I think God says you should have your yes, and your no is your no, and you're done.
It's interesting how many people struggle with saying no. Like even when they want...
Do men struggle with it?
Yeah, everyone, men and women, it doesn't matter. Even when it is a yes or no question, they'll constantly answer yes, but they'll say, hey, I really wish I could do that, but I have this other thing, and they run circles around this word called no. When in reality, that's what we're trying to say. We've lost that as a practice. Yes and no are the two most powerful words in the dictionary. They're defining words. I think we run circles around these words oftentimes.
Maybe we just don't know. Maybe we're just sort of wishy-washy. Do you think we're wishy-washy?
Well, I think that people oftentimes don't have a clear direction on where they're headed. And so what that means is they don't have clarity on where they're going. When you have clarity, I mean, talk about the philosophy of choice we talked about earlier. When you have clarity about where you're headed, decisions become increasingly more clear. And like I'm a guy that loves to say yes. People invite me to things, I want to go. It could be a trip, it could be an evening with friends, it could be anything. The answer is always yes. My wife is the one that the answer is always no, because she knows that I, you know, overplan, overextend everything we can do. For me, we ended up doing a spiritual practice, I think, for us. We took a sabbatical for 3 months, and we went
to
Nicaragua.
You and your wife.
Where'd you go? Nicaragua.
Wow.
And it was the first time we shut everything off. We had had so many different leadership roles. We were leading small groups. We were ushers at our church. We were leading a nonprofit. We were consulting on three different projects. We had all these things. We kept saying yes. And none of these had exit strategies. We didn't know how to quit anything.
Should you have an exit strategy before you start something?
Well, it depends on what you're committing to. I think I don't think it's very common to have exit strategies on anything. Like, most people just say yes to, I'll do this once a month for, they don't say how long. But we've learned, so when we took that sabbatical, we had to say no to everything. We had to shut everything down. And we took time to process for our family, what matters to us? How are we trying to lead our family? What do we feel like our responsibility is in raising our child? How has God designed us to care for these kids?
So you went off, you went to Nicaragua, and when you were done with your time, what did you learn? Did you have a clear direction then?
Yes and no. I mean,
wait a minute.
Hang on,
wait,
that's the
there's
book.
There's a book in there. Yes. No, it's yes or no, not yes,
yes or,
and no,
yeah, yeah.
Right?
You no, can't. We did. We, in that time, we found clarity on what we felt like we ought to do and what we were not called to do. There was things that we really missed. There was relationships we really missed. There was moments that we realized we weren't feeding our own souls in the midst of busyness of life. We had to say no to things to pursue the things that we were uniquely designed to do. I'll give you an example. I got asked to speak at this two different things on the same night, and I couldn't do both of them, right? And I remember I had to say no to them, but it gave me an opportunity to introduce a friend of mine that was an incredible communicator to share at this group. And I started realizing when I say no to things, it actually creates opportunities for people in our community to step up, to use their gifts that they are uniquely called to do. When I try to do everything, I'm actually not helping the full community that I am called to be in.
It's a wonderful way to look at it. You know, it's a very gracious act when you think of it that way. Jeff Shinnebarger, the book is Yes or No, How Your Everyday Decisions Will Forever Shape Your Life. It has been a real pleasure talking with you today.
Thank you.
Oh, what a great program we've enjoyed here today on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and the interview you just heard was from the retail show floor of ICRS in Atlanta, Georgia, from just a few months ago. If you'd like more information about our guest today or the Ministry of Family Talk, visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless, thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.